Welcome back to the Adam Schefter podcast as we leave week seven, head into week eight, and the NFL October 31st trade deadline is upon us. And with that, we will be joined today by the man who has a new book out, another author, this time the former Ohio State quarterback, Cardale Jones, former fourth-round pick of the Buffalo Bills. His new memoir is called Cardale Jones, Leading the Buckeyes, Finding My Purpose, and Never Giving Up, as he never gave up en route to leading Ohio State to the 2014 National Championship, which is nearing its 10-year anniversary early next year. And we will be joined today by the great Cardale Jones. But first, we are joined once again by the host of the Fantasy Focus podcast, my friend, my colleague, Daniel Dopp, for this week's weekly six pack.
All right, Adam, I got some fun things set up for us, but we're going to start here. Topic number one, let's talk Myles Garrett. Oh my gosh, did you see what this guy did against the Indianapolis Colts this week? Like, forget the fact that the game was incredible. Like, that Browns-Colts game, I did not expect it to be what it was. But most importantly, Myles Garrett left his stamp on that game that, for me, solidified him being the front runner of that defensive MVP conversation. What did you think when you were out there watching Myles Garrett just wreck that Colts offense?
Just that, Daniel, that he become the front runner for the defensive MVP.
There you go.
And what's amazing about it, right, is he has two sacks on Sunday. He turns around the game. He now has 82 career sacks at the age of 28, which is two more than Reggie White had at the same age. Reggie White, one of the greatest defensive players in NFL history. And I noticed, I posted something about it on Instagram, on X, and Calais Campbell chimed in that he thought he'd never see somebody who had the chance to get to 200 career sacks. But now that he looks at Myles Garrett, he's wondering whether Myles Garrett can get to 200 career sacks. So he's got 82. He needs 118 more. If we just do some simple math, right? 118 divided by how many more seasons are you going to play? Six more? Seven more?
Seven. Let's say seven seasons.
Seven. Yeah, he'd have to average 16.8 sacks. By the way, that doesn't even include the next part of this season. So you're talking about 16 sacks over the next 7 years. It doesn't seem out of the question for Myles Garrett, who's become a wrecking crew on the defensive side of the football and proved his worth as the number one overall pick of the draft that he came out of.
Absolutely. The dude looks incredible, Adam. If there's one guy that I feel like could do exactly what you're saying, Myles Garrett looks like he is the man to do it. All right. Topic number two, the Minnesota Vikings just took down the San Francisco 49ers on Monday Night Football, pulling them to 3-2 in the NFC North, Adam. When you look ahead at their schedule, how you feeling about the Minnesota Vikings' chances here?
Think about this, Daniel. We had everybody across the country screaming for the Vikings to trade Kirk Cousins. All the Jet fans say, give us Kirk Cousins. And we kept saying, why are the Vikings trading Kirk Cousins when we don't know what is in store in their season? And guess what? Now they're 3-4. They're coming off a huge Monday night win against the 49ers. Kirk Cousins showed up in prime time. And if you look ahead at the schedule, it is tasty, Daniel. Okay? 3-4 at Green Bay, at Atlanta, home for New Orleans, at Denver, home for Chicago, at Las Vegas. Like, is there anybody there where you say, well, Minnesota's not going to win that game? I mean,
nope.
They're not going to win every game, but they have a chance to be in all those games and make a playoff push that nobody saw coming from the Vikings team that everybody was exhorting to trade Kirk Cousins and move on from all these pieces. Now, again, we've talked about the fact that for Justin Jefferson to come back, they were going to have to win. Well, guess what? They're giving hope to all the people who manage Justin Jefferson on their fantasy rosters that they're going to put together enough wins to make a strong enough playoff run that Justin Jefferson could be back later this season. Again, that's what they thought. That's what they said. I always felt like they had to win to get him back. They're winning. So the Vikings are doing their part and they're impressing.
Heck yeah. Adam, as a fantasy manager, I would love to have Justin Jefferson come back to my squad. But to be honest, let's move on. Topic number three here. Because for me, fantasy football, a part of what's happened this year is there's been so many injuries. It feels like across the board, we have seen so many major guys get hurt. Adam, we had more guys get hurt this last week. Jerome Ford ended up getting banged up. We've seen more Kareem Hunt because of that. Kyren Williams is on IR for the next 4 weeks. So how are you looking at this? I feel like you're in the war room league. Do you have anybody like this that you've been dealing with injuries?
Well, let me say this, Daniel. Kyren Williams and Jerome Ford were the two players that I recommended to most everybody.
Oh.
And when I did my best ball drafts this summer as exercises to get ready for the football season, the two players that were most heavily owned were Kyren Williams and Jerome Ford. And I go back to a text that I received at 6.07 a.m. on Tuesday, September 19th, which was the morning after Nick Chubb suffered the unfortunate injury that he did, and I had the great Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd texted me.
Love Paul.
Well, it's looking like your thoughts on Kyren Williams and Jerome Ford were prescient. Wow. And again, he says, we feel sick for Chubb, but now we got Jerome Ford. And guess what? Kyren Williams over the weekend goes on IR, out 4 games. Jerome Ford on Sunday, high ankle sprain. And that's how quickly fantasy football can change, because it is a bummer to see those two guys that I have on my lineups everywhere, go out, and very sickening. That's how quickly fantasy football changes, Daniel, right? One Sunday, it changes for fantasy football. It changes for teams. One injury, bang, just like that.
You got to figure out how to move on from there. That's part of the frustrating and fun part of fantasy football, Adam. It really is. All right, topic number four. Let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. They've been wheeling and dealing, my friend, after going out and beating the Miami Dolphins. Heard rumors that they traded for Kevin Byard. Adam, give me some details around this trade. We've had more and more trades lately, so I want the deets that you have about this one.
Well, what I find fascinating is that the Eagles general manager, Howie Roseman, and the Eagles front office never, ever rest. And what they do is they go find these veterans. And they went out last year, I remember being on day two of the draft, and they traded a fourth and a swap of seventh round draft picks for DeAndre Swift. How's that trade working out? And not only that, but Swift is in the last year of his contract. So if he leaves in free agency and gets a contract somewhere else, they're going to get back a comp pick. So they get back their fourth, basically, that they gave up, but they had Swift this year to replace Miles Sanders, who got a huge deal in Carolina. They go and trade a third and fifth round pick for Darius Slay. How's that worked out? They trade first and third round picks to Tennessee for A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown has more receiving yards this season than all the Titans receivers combined. Mm. He's killing people.
Mm.
And now they go back to Tennessee again for a fifth and sixth round pick along with Terrell Edmonds, and they go get Kevin Byard, who, by the way, is viewed as a leader, as somebody you want in your locker room, not to mention the fact that he's a Pro Bowl player. So they keep finding these guys who are being cast aside on certain teams. They're not paying premium prices. They're paying discounted prices for these guys, and they're plugging them in to go play and make themselves the contender that they are. And this is what they do. And by the way, I think that'll be it for them before the trade deadline, but I never rule them out. They're always sniffing around, always looking, always seeing if there's some other veteran they can pry loose to make that team better. We got the brotherly shove, and we got all these. This is like the equivalent of the brotherly shove. You know that they're going to be trading for veterans all the time, pushing people around, getting people in to help that team.
Adam, you talk about it. I mean, I think this happened after we recorded last week, but you're talking about a trade that happened here. The Eagles also signed Julio Jones. You want to talk about adding a veteran presence to their team? They literally did that after we taped the podcast last week. So
yeah, and they went out. They looked at the film, and they thought he was good. And I go back to what the Buccaneers said just over a year ago, whether it's valid or not, but they said at the start of the season that in training camp last summer in 2022, that maybe their most impressive receiver at training camp was not Mike Evans, was not Chris Godwin, was Julio Jones.
Wow.
So the Eagles added him as well, and we'll see what he can do for this team down the stretch.
All right. Topic number five for this six pack. Let's talk about how good Travis Kelce is and the splits that he has when Taylor Swift is in the building, Adam Schefter.
Yeah, you know, listen, Daniel, I know people get worked up about it. I know they don't like to hear about it anymore. I know that we're not supposed to bring up Taylor Swift. And as I said, facts are facts.
That's okay? Right. That's right.
In the four games that Taylor Swift has been in attendance, he's averaging 108 receiving yards per game. In the game she wasn't there, he's averaging 46 and a half. Now, I'll also say this. As a guy who rosters Travis Kelce on one of my fantasy teams, I remember the day that she showed up against Chicago, and like there was this buzz in the building. All I have to say is think about if you had a girlfriend showing up at your job for the first time, you'd want to show out, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And by the way, if it's this torrid new hot romance and it's going on strong and she keeps coming, you're going to want to keep showing out. So as somebody who has him on my fantasy team, I want Taylor Swift to show up to every game right now until that relationship, the honeymoon phase is off. Then she can stay home, go on a European tour, go on a new tour, leave him alone. But until then, keep on coming, because it is bringing out the best in him right now.
I am with you, Adam. I think we need to get her season tickets. I think Chiefs Nation just needs to get her season tickets so that she's always there for every single one of those home games at least. And it's nice because you get to see her also on the road. She's got that cachet to be able to show up to those road games. So I am totally with you. I love being able to see this because Travis Kelce looks like a man reinvigorated out on the field with Patrick Mahomes out there.
And selfishly, we want that romance to keep flourishing and blossoming. We want it to keep going on all year long. The Chiefs play on Christmas Day.
Ooh.
And that game is the Slime Time game on Nickelodeon this year. And
shut up.
You know, there are certain people that are going to be working that game for Nickelodeon. So we would love for people that we know very well, that we love very much, that we care about a whole lot, to have the opportunity to meet Taylor Swift. Well, that would be kind of cool if that were to happen on Christmas Day this year. So we'll see how that works out too, Daniel.
Fingers crossed, Adam. That would be awesome. All right. Number six, our final topic of the six pack. Let's talk about coming up. CJ Stroud, the number two overall pick, has looked fantastic for the Houston Texans. Now going to be taking on Bryce Young, the number one overall pick for the winless Carolina Panthers, Adam.
And maybe it started already, but let this be the first spot that this conversation begins, because you're going to be hearing about it all week long. Everybody's going to go back and revisit. Did the Panthers do the right thing? They traded up, and they traded an awful lot, and they traded up to go take Bryce Young.
Yep.
The Texans, at number two, traded up and got C.J. Stroud. They traded up to three, but they moved up knowing that they could get Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud has looked like a baller, and C.J. Stroud has put on a show so far. And I'm going to say this to you also. Everybody remembers the viral video when Josh McCown, one of the Panthers' assistant coaches, showed up and told C.J. Stroud, hey, get ready, you know, get ready to move to Charlotte or whatever it was that he said. There was that video, and they didn't pick him. And maybe C.J. Stroud's going to put a real plain, simple spin on it this week. But if there was somebody that bypassed me in the draft, you'd remember that. How many times do we hear about Amon-Ra St. Brown remembers every one of the receivers picked ahead
every
of him?
Every single one. Yes.
Right? Or all the players who are pissed off about all the guys that went. Well, there was one guy that went in front of C.J. Stroud.
Yep.
He's got the chance to meet up with that guy this week. And so I think that this matchup is going to be a little bit more personal to him. Just like Travis Kelce finds certain motivation in certain ways when girlfriend shows. I think this is going to be C.J. Stroud's motivation this upcoming weekend playing against Bryce Young. And we're going to see how that works out. And both teams, those picks are going to be analyzed all week long.
Oh, yeah.
Starts right here. And I figured that would be a worthy last six-pick item as we lead into our next guest, Daniel, another Ohio State quarterback. So we go from our conversation about C.J. Stroud to a conversation with Cardale Jones, who has a new book out called Leading the Buckeyes, Finding My Purpose, and Never Giving Up. And when he showed up here, after not giving up, first thing he does, as you'll see in this conversation, he brings out an Ohio State football helmet. Thank you, Cardale Jones.
I'm just sit this here I'm gonna just sit this here. I see that helmet in the background. So yeah, hey, how you doing? Oh, this right here. Oh, I didn't see that. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, here's the thing about that. That kind of stuff doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I love that though. I love it, man.
You know what? If you still had the win streak against our school, against Michigan, then it might bother me a little bit more. But I'm good with that, Cardinal. I could look at that helmet now and accept it without any sort of objection.
You know what? I love that, man. And kudos to you for the last 2 years, even though you guys forfeited 3 years ago. But it's okay. And then, you know what? These right here, this is the only piece of jewelry I wear. And this is the gold pants that we get when we beat Michigan. And in 2014, I was lucky enough to be able to play in that game. And that's the only game I ever played in versus the team up north. And he's the only gold pair. So I have four. Every time you beat him, you get a pair. I got four, but it's the only pair I care about because the only game I played in. And it's the only piece of jewelry I wear. I don't wear the rings. I don't wear earrings. I don't wear watches, really. And this is the only piece of jewelry that I really hold near dear to my heart.
Is that right? First of all, I heard you say the word Michigan. I heard you say it, okay?
It's okay. So it's okay.
I heard you say it. But secondly, the Ohio State players get a gold pin if they beat Michigan?
Yeah, so it goes back to the Woody Hayes and Bo Schembech. Well, actually, the Woody Hayes days, actually, Bo was a part of the team and on the staff at the time where, you know, you guys were early 60s, I think that is, yeah. Late 50s, when it was just a domination. And Woody Hayes made a comment, or one of the coaches, I can't remember who directly it was, made a comment saying, basically, they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like us, and that's where the rivalry and that's where these were born. So it's like represent beating the pants off Michigan.
And so you wear that all the time? Like, on a, you don't take it off?
You know what? I wear it mostly in football season. You know, wow. Usually most of the time in the rest of the year is just hanging up at the house, like kind of on my nightstand. But football season, yeah, I wear these faithfully.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. It haven't brought me much luck the last 2 years. But
So it wasn't like you just wore that specifically for me today, Cardell, right?
No, of course not. I actually intentionally tilted the camera up so you don't see the whole, you know what I'm saying? So I can't rub it in much because you guys got the last two dubs, so.
And how do you feel about this year?
We'll see. The cool
that's
thing
not
about
a glory. That's not a ringing endorsement there for your school.
But, oh, my God. Man, listen, I'm trying to be unbiased. The cool thing about rivalries is that once you get to that week, rivalry week, I mean, it's the coolest week in all the sports because usually you got every rivalry game going on that you can think of, from Alabama, Auburn, to the Civil War out in Oregon, Oregon State, and things like that. And records go out the window. And you know this. I mean, you've been covering sports longer than I've been around. Records go out the window. You never know. You can't bank on what happened last year. You can't bank on what happened in the previous 20 years. Can't bank on anything, right? And you usually see a lot of unsung heroes kind of emerge in rivalry games. And I mean, from I can think of numerous just in Ohio State, Michigan rivalry alone. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. We'll see.
Let me ask you a question. Now, you have a new book out, and we're going to get to your book, Leading the Buckeyes, Finding My Purpose, and Never Giving Up. But I do want to ask you about, being that we're on the topic, the 2014 season, which, of course, ended with Ohio State being the first ever college football playoff championship team. What do you remember about that, Cardale?
I mean, everything from going into the game versus Michigan and earning these gold pants to really preparing for Alabama. Well, actually preparing for Wisconsin the following week, then Alabama, and getting to playoffs. I think the wildest moment of that time for me personally was when we jumped, I think it was TCU and Baylor from six, I think it was six or seven, and they were four and five, and it would hurt them clearly, no. And then ironically, I got a Michigan killer calling me right now.
Who is that?
JT Barrett.
Oh
yeah, no.
That's the picture you have on your phone of him beating Michigan.
That's me and my guy. That was my first year away from Ohio State. I had an opportunity. I was with the Bills. I had an opportunity. I think it timed perfectly with a bye week, and I flew up to the game. And I'm holding up a four. He holding up a five for how many gold pants we got. So he got five. I got four. So that's my guy, and I give him a call back later. I know me and him been playing phone tag the last couple of days because he's up in Detroit, Michigan, coaching for the Lions. So yes. he got some Wolverines and some Buckeyes on that team. But going back to that 2014 season, I think it was that was the biggest thing, all the hype that we got when we jumped TCU, and I think, like I said, it was Baylor at the time, and everything that we was going through throughout the season, and it gives you an opportunity to look back and reflect, and you know, you really appreciate the journey that, you know, you guys ultimately achieved the goal that you set out to achieve.
It's almost a 10-year anniversary of that team. Is it still as fresh in your mind? Wait. You don't like me to age you there? Is that
don't make me sound too old?
10 years is nothing.
Yeah, and that's crazy. And hopefully the Buckeyes can bring one sooner rather than later. So, but yeah, it's crazy to even think about it. And look where we at now with college football. Just in a short period of 9 or 10 years, the whole college football playoff system is going to evolve to 12 teams next year. And then to the structure of the conferences. And, you know, looking at my time in college, 8 years ago now, it's night and day from NIL to conferences to rules and regulations to everything. Transfer portal.
Everything. You're now back in Columbus to help run an NIL fund for Ohio State student athletes. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this new era we're in with college football and the NIL, where the sport is being redefined on an almost daily basis, it seems, Cardale?
You know, that's a great question. And I think, me and a buddy, Brian Schottenstein, runs a collective, that's, I guess, the name that they gave us, a collective nonprofit organization where we help benefit immediate student athlete opportunities in NIL space here at Ohio State. And, I had an opportunity early on to testify the state house to get NIL passed here in the state of Ohio. And I was for, but I really wasn't. It was kind of a thin line. And I think I foresaw a lot of the issues that we see today in NIL. When you talk about freshmen coming in, making a lot of money, or being tainted in recruiting, or being incentivized in recruiting. And, I firmly believe it was going to create a bigger gap between the haves and have-nots. When I'm talking about the major powerhouses in college athletics versus, the other smaller conferences and universities, even smaller schools in major conferences, right? I was just making this comment the other day. I said, man, it got to be tough to recruit players to come to Minnesota, and I think Coach Fletcher doing a great job with that. But the aspect and the hindrance of NIL, right, is a huge factor in a lot of these guys' recruitment process. And I think our AD just came out last week and just said, some of these guys are asking for $5 to $10,000 just to take a visit to a university. Right. Whoa. So which Whoa. is crazy to see where NIL has evolved to. And in layman's terms, it's just marketing deals. Right. But, I was always for the universities paying the players, coming up with some type of revenue share agreement with the players and have structures and tiers of that versus letting it be the Wild Wild West, because you get so many different inputs and hands within your program. Right. I can only imagine, and I don't know if this a coach had built this yet, but it's going to come a day and age where a coach is going to deal with a player going to a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 NIL appearance, and it's going to conflict with either class or practice or walkthrough or tutoring. And how do you police that? Right. I mean, there's no really incentivizing that player not to go to that. What you going to do? Fine him? You can't do that. You don't control his funds. Right. And then, and how can you accurately tell a kid, hey, no, miss out on that $50,000. I need you at this 1 hour and 20 minute class or this tutor or, things. So it's a, it's definitely a curveball in coaching and college athletic that kept me steer away from coaching in college. I tell you that.
You didn't want to do that, huh?
Not a chance.
Yeah. Well, but your comments, they bring us right back to your famous tweet from 2012, which I'm sure you're asked about to this day.
Yes.
Why should we have to go to class if we came here to play football? We ain't come to play school. Classes are pointless. That was the tweet, Cardale, right?
Yeah. And I think out of that whole comment, 99% of it is true, except that classes are pointless. Point. But you look at these kids around the country when they commit to a university. They don't say, I'm committing to Ohio State Business School, Fisher Business School, to further my education. No, you don't even sell me that in the recruiting process, which I understand. I understand certain things that athletes have to do, or inner city kids or kids period have to do to get on these college campus is athletics, right? So I know it's not going to be too much tied into the academic part of things, but that is a requirement and a standard. And that's kind of assumption that you understand you still have to go to school here, right? But you know, my argument has always been, if a doctor, if I'm a, you know, it's extremely tough to become a doctor, a lawyer, a journalism, you know, an artist. But yet, you know, knowing the odds to making it to those levels, you still put things in place at a university level to help them get there, right? If that's classes, if that's certain, you know, when you designate a college and a school in your major, why can't you major in your sport?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So if you had to redo that tweet today, though, the only part that you would take out is that classes are pointless. The rest of the tweet is still as applicable in 2023 as it was in 2012.
Exactly. I would just take out the classes are pointless part because I would word it a little bit differently and say, hey, can I get some more football classes, or can I get more classes that's going to help me be a better quarterback? And the great thing about that time period, I'm glad that tweet was the only one that really blew up, because I kind of went on a little rant right after. And, you know, I said something like, you know, what the heck does this sociology class got to do with me being a better quarterback? How's this going to help me be a better quarterback, right? Because I think I was a little ahead of my time when it came to thinking, when it came to just trying to perform at a high level in a major, in a high-stress environment, as far as, you know, Ohio State.
You know, I'm just thinking, though. I got on Twitter in 2009. That tweet was in 2012. That tweet, back in the day, went viral, right? There were not many tweets going viral. That was one of the first tweets that went viral,
argument.
Cardell.
Adam, that's my argument. I don't know if you ever heard me say this before. I say, you know, I know it's Elon Musk now and you call it X, but y'all owe me something. Y'all owe me some royalties or something, because that was the first tweet that really went viral and that was covered by pretty much any and everybody. I mean, that thing was on CNN. It was on Good Morning America. It was on ESPN, clearly, and Fox and all this stuff. And I remember vaguely when I was sitting in my dorm, because my coach had suspended me for that upcoming game. I think that happened on a Thursday or Friday. And we played Saturday. It was Nebraska's first year in the Big Ten. It was both teams were undefeated. It was Saturday night, Scarlett out the shoe, Urban Meyer's first year. So all this hype was built up around us. And I brought so much negative publicity to the university and to the program. Mm-hmm. He just suspended me for that game. Hey, don't show up, blah, blah, blah. So as I'm at home in my dorm watching the game, getting ready, pretty much that Saturday morning, it was a night game, they're still talking about it. And I remember watching, I forgot what station it was, but the anchor was like, yes, Ohio State student athlete takes his thoughts to social media on a site called Tweeter and tweeted it out. Like, she didn't even understand. It's like, it's tweeted, you know what I'm saying? And tweeted out his thoughts on education and stuff like that. So, and like, I remember right after, if you don't know what Twitter is, it's a social media site where you can post about, like Twitter, you couldn't even DM yet. You couldn't post pictures yet. It was just literally tweet something and retweet. Or like it. That was it. You couldn't comment, or you couldn't like add to the retweets with it, or things like, you couldn't do any of that stuff yet.
Do people still remind you about that tweet today?
I mean, yeah, a lot of people, because I think it's ironic that, you know, clearly I still graduated from Ohio State, which was a huge accomplishment for me and one of the biggest goals I set out at that time in my life. And I think on my cap, my graduation cap, you know, I quoted, like, someone once said, we didn't come here to play school. So it was kind of a poke at myself and a poke at that. I got so much heat from it, for people, you know, from the outside looking in, clearly, because I mean, you know, understandably, they didn't think I took academics and, you know, education as serious as I did personally, and as serious as the university and the football program did. You know, we took pride, and we still take pride in our team GPA. You know, we take pride and we make a big deal of academic accomplishments just as much as athletic accomplishments. So it was definitely a dark cloud I put on the university and the football program in particular for my immature comments at the time.
But you put it on your graduation cap when you graduated the Ohio State?
Yes, I did.
And what made you do that?
Just poking fun at it, because I can remember a lot of the things that, you know, media or people were saying about me. You know, I was dumb and, you know, dumb jock and just a lot of negative things. And I was like, okay, well, ultimately I got the last laugh, because, you know, yeah, that was, I get, you might've developed that opinion about me from a tweet, but this is who I really am. Right. And I think one of the things that I said, actually, after the 2014 season, and had an opportunity to potentially go to the NFL and probably been drafted higher than I was drafted the following year, I said the biggest thing is, like, I really want to finish my degree. It's something I worked extremely hard for. It's something I put a lot of manpower and hours behind, and I want to work my butt off to attain this.
And you did. You got your degree.
I did. Yeah.
Now, so that's the great part. Now, what made you want to write a book, Cardale? That book's a lot of work. They're a lot of work.
It is. And I always enjoy writing from a very young age. I think what really inspired me to do so, it was first year really out of football, it was COVID, right? XFL yep. just shut down. I mean, the world really just shut down. And it was my first real fall out football. And I was still going through my routine of training and working out and things like that. But I still had, I had as much free time on my hands than I ever had in my life, period. You know, so I'm like, I want to maximize this. You know, it helped me become a more involved dad at the time, where I'm not just seeing my kiddos, you know, on bye weeks, you know, during that time of the year or in between training. And I really just dove deep into my experience at Ohio State. And I figured, you know, I can, my experience and some of the things that I went through and how I got through them can help, you know, the next student athlete. Because I do believe that, you know, my career is very, I think, more likely to happen to someone far as going to a university, highly recruited and starting from ground zero, I mean, and really trying to build back up and try to make a name for yourself. That's more likely to happen than coming out five star, starting as a freshman, All-American, NFL first round draft pick, and so on. Right. We see more careers like mine. And you know, I've seen many guys that didn't respond well to taking the back seat when they first enter mm-hmm. or on campus. And I think, you know, like I said, sharing my experience or sharing some of the things I went through. I don't think I had the worst experience ever, but it was definitely tough and it was different. And I think that can help someone get through not just their college experience, but just through life in tough times, period.
Now, there's a story in the book about how you as a child stuck a bobby pin in an outlet and got electrocuted. What happened there?
That's funny because one of my favorite stories to tell, and I kid you guys not, and I really wish I had some of my other siblings sitting right next to me. I don't recall being able to throw a football that good until then, until after that moment. And I'm not saying that that shot gave me powers or anything like that, but I'm telling you, my brothers and really my sisters are pretty athletic as well. They did not let me play games with them. They did not let me throw the ball around. Like, it was keep away my time. And I don't really recall being able to throw before then. You know, so, yeah, so
wow.
My sister's room and, you know, I was just a curious kid. I'm still a curious person. And I was like, you know, this thing looked like the little jackset from a like a core outlet. Let me see what that does. Man, I stuck that thing. That thing threw me across the room. That thing threw me across the room. And like, you know, it was bad. And, you know, I'm still shaking up about it at the time. And, you know, my mom walked in the room. And she realized what I did. I still got my butt kicked. I'm just like, geez, I got shocked and my butt whooped. So that sucked.
Wow. So if you hadn't been shocked that day, then Michigan might have been able to beat you in 2014.
You know what? Only one can tell, right? I think we can make that assumption.
You also talked about Urban Meyer in the book. What was his tough love coaching like for you?
You know what? I think it was just different. It was just different. It was something that, you know, I didn't really have the greatest experience or relationship with Coach Meyer at my time at Ohio State, because I think, and that's no knock on him, I think he did a great job. And you look at his track record of coaches underneath him, why they all go on to have, you know, head coaching careers and do great things. He put that onus on our position coaches. Right? I mean, I get it. He's dealing with 109 guys a year, you know, turning over probably 30 to 40. It's no real time and day to make a impact and relationship with everyone. I get that, you know, and I'm not selfish enough to say, oh, I wish I had a better relationship with him, because he put his onus on his coaches to develop those personal relationships where he didn't spread himself too thin and he can keep his eye on, you know, the ultimate prize of leading his team in the right direction. But yeah, I think the things that I talk about with him, I mean, you know, people can look at him two different ways. If he was a jerk, or if he was as militant as people make him out to be. And I think it's a little of both, actually. So I think it's a little of both because, you know, I think at that time where you at the, you know, top of college football at a place like Ohio State, you got to do whatever you got to do to keep guys motivated, to keep guys competing at a high level, and to ultimately continue to solidify your job. Because, I'm pretty sure Ryan Day is feeling this right now. I mean, you know, I think he lost 4 or 5 games here as a head coach, but, you know, 0-2 versus Michigan as a head duck. And some people calling for his job because of just those two games. So Ohio State is a place where you are continually on notice and you continue to perform and continue to produce at a high level.
How much attention do you pay to the NFL these days, Cardell?
A lot still, a lot. I mean, you know, I still got so many teammates from college and a few family members playing in the NFL, and you know, I try to keep up with those guys as much as possible. Actually, I'm going to make it out to a few NFL games this year to see some guys that, you know, I played with in college.
Who's the guy that you pay the most attention to?
Kobe Bryant out of Seattle Seahawks. You know, Glenville kid, from the neighborhood, Cincinnati, coached by Coach Fickell. Coach Fickell recruited me. I played with Kobe's brother, my little cousin, and, you know, a guy that just overachieved, you know, if you guys would have said, or if I would have said Kobe's going to be playing in the NFL one day after seeing him in high school, I'd have been like, it's a long shot. But for him to come out in college and win a Jim Thorpe Award and then, you know, go on to be drafted by the Seahawks and perform at a high level as a rookie and then, you know, going to his second year and still producing and add value to that defense, overachiever for sure.
What do you think of what C.J. Stroud has done so far for the Houston Texans as we tape this?
I'm loving it. I love when a guy like CJ, and I think we naturally gravitated to each other when we first met each other. You know, he was going through a situation where he was in a quarterback battle, right? Just like I was, right? With a lot of things. I think Urban recruited CJ and Ryan recruited Devin at the time, Kyle at the time. So Urban's not there anymore. So probably feeling something like, I'm not this guy's guy. This other guy got more leeway, whatever he may have been feeling. I understood it because I felt that, right? I walked into that, you know, immediately, not being that staff's guy, and understand it. I already knew what he had to bring to the table, just from his attitude. Never seen him play Never seen him play to that point when we ran into each other and we met and we spoke 20, 30 minutes. And I'm like, man, he's going to be like, if his mindset is like that on the field as well as how he's approaching just life, I think he can be special here. Right. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people thought that just meeting him for the first time. But what he's doing right now, loving it. I mean, a guy haven't threw an interception yet. I'm taking care of the ball. And he continues to get better each and every week with not, you know, too many weapons around him. But he's just, you know, he's playing within the system. He's out there looking comfortable each and every week. And he's getting the job done.
So far, he looks like the best player from last year's draft so far as we tape this.
You know what? So far, I do agree with that. But you have some amazing players in this past draft with Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, clearly, CJ, and then some of these receivers as well. I think this has been one of the deepest drafts in the last couple of years, just with skill players in particular. But CJ was, I mean, going in, he was always definitely a guy that you knew that was one of the top, you know, five guys in his draft overall.
And how good is Marvin Harrison Jr. going to be at the next level, Cardale?
Oh, my God. Man, wow. I remember 2 years ago when Marvin was coming off his freshman year, and I had an opportunity to throw at Ohio State Pro Day. And I was trained there, and, you know, I would get some routes done, and he wanted to get some extra work. I'm like, yeah, let's throw then. Let's do it. So I'm talking NFL ball with him and things like that, and I'm pretty sure he heard all this stuff from before, being the son of a freaking legend, actually my favorite receiver of all time. And watching his range, seeing him run, seeing him get out of breaks, and seeing his stride, seeing how athletic he was, he's the most rangiest person that I ever seen with my own two eyes. He displayed every week with his ability to catch the ball, right, in crazy positions. And just, I mean, his hands are humongous, right? And then you don't think a guy like that has that much speed. But, I mean, I think still to this day he has ran the fastest time. This year in all the football, I think it was like 2 weeks ago versus Western Kentucky with 23 miles per hour on the football field, right? I think he broke a big one. But I think he's going to be special at the next level. And I think he's going to be a guy that's going to have immediate impact on whatever organization he goes to.
Who was the best receiver that you ever played with?
Wow, that I ever played with. I'm going to name some guys, I guess, in college. I'm going to have to say I can't say Michael Thomas because he has got a lot better in NFL. But for what I like to do, take the ball deep, I'm going to have to say Devin Smith. He was one of the guys that, you know, can outrun a coverage. But you know, at Ohio State, you know, our receiver corps was a little bit different than these guys now. You know, I think I cut off my left arm to play with these guys now because all of these guys are special and can do everything just as good as the next guy. When I was playing, Devin, we knew Devin was our deep threat, right? He was really only focusing on one or two routes, maybe three. Yeah. Mike was a big-time possession guy. Mike Thomas was a big-time possession guy. Who can take you deep, though? But that wasn't his forte. Great possession receiver. Those 50-50 balls with Mike was like 80-20, right? And then you had guys like Jalen Marshall, Dontre Wilson, who were guys just get the ball to in space and let them do what they got to do, right? Kill you in the immediate game. And then Braxton Miller as well, when he made the transition to receiver. And then you saw special things in younger guys like Paris and like Johnny Dixon and like Terry McLaren, like, and those guys that you knew was going to be special. I wouldn't say I knew these guys would be this special, but you knew they were going to be special. But my favorite guy, because what I love to do on a football field, is Devin Smith.
But nobody compares to Marvin Jr.?
I don't think none of these guys can compare to him. I think Marvin has the best attribute in all of them, all in one. I mean, Marvin is just as a deep threat as anyone else. Like I say, he just dropped 23 miles per hour on the field. You know, and then the guy don't drop the ball. His route running is ridiculous. I think Mike was a really great route runner as well. And I think those 50-50 balls to Marvin is more like maybe 85-15, you know. So I definitely think he is one of the best receivers to ever play at Ohio State, if not the best. You have to go back. You know, I know we had Terry Glenn and, you know, Chris Carter and Tegan Jr. and a lot of guys like that. But it's not one thing that stands out to Marvin and say, oh, yeah, he just dominant at deep ball. No, he is a complete receiver. I think he's one of the most complete receivers in Ohio State history.
Hey, Cardale, I wish you a lot of luck with the book. I hope it's a huge success. I hope you become a New York Times bestseller. And you enter that into your forte, and then you could tweet out something that maybe supplants your tweet from 2012 about becoming a best-selling author.
We'll see. That is the goal, and I appreciate it. As always, great catching up with you. And we'll see here in about what in the November, which one of us that you know have the last laugh for this year into next year.
Cardell, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me.
And there is the former Ohio State quarterback, Cardell Jones, new author, Leading the Buckeyes, Finding My Purpose, and Never Giving Up. We wish him the best with that book as well. And that tweet, nobody will ever, ever forget that tweet from Cardell Jones. All right, let's bring back my friend, the host of the Fantasy Focus podcast, Daniel Dopp. Daniel, we wrapped up our fantasy basketball draft last week. And I'm just curious to know your takeaways of your team from the draft with you holding the number one pick in a 14-team, nine-category league.
Wow, I'll tell you what, it was a third-round reversal too. So in the first round, going with Joker always makes me feel good. I got to be honest though, Adam, I'm a fantasy football guy, so I took some chances here, all right? I made sure that I had some resources available to me so that while I was drafting, I was making some decent picks. But adding guys like Kyrie Irving, Zach LaVine, Kawhi Leonard, like I was thrilled with that. I had to get me some Detroit Pistons as well. I made sure to grab Jaden Ivey. Knew it was going to happen. So I don't dislike my team. I think I got to get a little bit into the season until I can know where I'm at, some strengths and weaknesses. But I'll tell you what, being able to have Joker, number one overall, he's like the Band-Aid that fixes a little bit of everything.
He's unbelievable. He just delivers one year.
All those categories. Like you feel so safe with him. So I'm excited to see how I can go this year.
Well, the guy that I was going to take at number nine all along was Devin Booker. And when nine came up and my slot was on the board, I had a choice of Devin Booker and or Anthony Edwards. And I'm like, huh. And it's funny how in my mind I had accepted the fact I was taking Devin Booker until I didn't and took Anthony Edwards. And so that's going to be one of the picks that stays with me all year long, comparing Devin Booker to Anthony Edwards. And the other pick that I thought is going to stay with me for an awful long time would be in the sixth round with the 79th overall selection, being that I was guard light because I went Anthony Edwards in the first round. I took Terry Rozier, Scary Terry, from Carolina. I was debating between a couple of guys, one of them being Jabari Smith, who wound up going a mere four picks later to one Field Yates. So if I regret that and Jabari comes on, I'll have to pay the price and maybe I could always trade for Jabari Smith. But that was something that was interesting to me. And I also noticed that since the league has gotten underway, if you'll notice, Daniel, I made the very first move in the league.
Of course you did, Adam. Of course.
I pride myself on that. And not only did I make the first move, which let the record show, I drafted Trey Murphy, moved him to IR, picked up Haywood Highsmith from Miami, moved him to IR, picked up Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who I subsequently dropped already for Xavier Tillman after the Steven Adams news of the season-ending surgery. So I've made a number of moves before we even got underway. Dropped Jalen Johnson, the small forward from the Atlanta Hawks, to pick up Zaire Williams, shooting guard Memphis. All of a sudden, I'm into Memphis now with Zaire Williams and Xavier Tillman. This is what I love. Daniel, my hobby is back. I woke up this morning, the day we record this, Tuesday, October 24th, and I said, forget about the NBA being back. Fantasy basketball is back. My obsession, my vice, my outlet, my escape, it's back. My built-in five-minute cigarette break every single day is back. I'm back to smoking. We're smoking, Daniel.
All right.
I want to thank our guest this week, Cardell Jones, for the time that he gave us. I want to thank my great producers, Christina Buswell and Sarah Abbott, along with the host of the Fantasy Focus podcast, Daniel Dopp, and you, the listener, for tuning in to another Adam Schefter podcast. Please join us again next week when we are scheduled to be joined by the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, Bobby Slowick. Until then, everybody, have a great week, be well, and stay safe.